Welcome to Christian Worldview with Dr. John Coben. Dr. Coben is an author, columnist, financial planner, and international lecturer. He holds a PhD degree in public policy, MA degrees in economics and business economics, and is a graduate of Reformed Bible College. Dr. Coben is an outspoken critic of public schools, government regulation, the IRS, paper money, welfare, and abortion. An evangelical Christian and the father of six homeschooled children, Dr. Coben is applauded by listeners across America and around the world as a champion of liberty, limited government, free markets, and peace. Now let's join Dr. Coben with Christian Worldview.
And a happy Tuesday morning to you. This is Dr. John Coben with Christian Worldview. We're so happy you've joined us this morning on your radio dial. In Greenville, it's got a lot of fog this morning. It's 45 degrees outside. It's going to rise to 70 degrees during the day. Should be a real pleasant day, a typical Greenville, South Carolina day in February. Trees already have the buds on them. We're already heading towards the springtime. And we only ended up having one snow this winter. What a shame. The snow was only about 1 inch, at least around where we are. At any rate, we're thankful once again to be able to have upgraded our studio a little bit. We started just a couple minutes late today just because we were getting used to the nuances of the newness of our studio. And we'd like to encourage you to continue to help support us prayerfully, also to help support us financially if possible. You can go to the webpage and find out the different ways that you can support Christian Worldview as well as the Tyranny Response Network. Simply go to www.policyofliberty.net and click on the links there that will direct you to the various staff of the volunteer staff of the Tyranny Response Network as well as Christian Worldview, and they can give you an idea just how you can support the show. Once again, we have a very interesting day lined up for us. We're going to have hopefully some deep thinking, some interesting questions that come up. I've got something I want to read about from Chuck Baldwin, who always is very impressive to me. Chuck Baldwin, of course, the attorney who was the vice presidential candidate for the Constitution Party. He sends out a newsletter every week or so, and this one is called "The Era of Big Government is Back." Before I read this, I want to just remind you of our phone numbers, 864-201-6955. That's 864-201-6955. You can also send us your questions and comments by email to questions@policyofliberty.net, questions@policyofliberty.net, and even during the show, those things will pop up on my laptop computer. Remember, if you're listening to the show at any other time besides 7:30 in the morning till 9 Eastern time, you're listening to recorded broadcast, and we're glad that you're doing so. But don't try to call the show during the recorded broadcast. You can send us emails, however, about whatever topic you hear about, and we'll be able to comment on them the next show. At any rate, Chuck Baldwin says, "The era of big government is back." Many of us remember President Bill Clinton saying in 1996, "The era of big government is over." Of course, that statement was made on the heels of the famous congressional elections of 1994, when a hearty band of 73 freshman Republicans swept into the House of Representatives, promising to reduce the size and scope of the federal government. On the strength of that stunning election victory, they pushed through a budget resolution that called for elimination of scores of federal programs and up to five departments. However, it's now time to set the record straight regarding the era of big government is back. Not only has the Republican Party not decreased the size and scope of the federal government, it has exploded the growth of government to unprecedented levels. According to the Cato Institute, overall federal spending has increased twice as fast under George W. Bush as under Bill Clinton, and no one even bothers to whisper about cutting any federal departments. On the contrary, President Bush's budgets have even increased expenditures for nefarious organizations, such as the National Endowment for the Arts and the Legal Services Corporation. Now, in case some of you who are educated in public school like me and don't know what the word nefarious means, it means evil, wicked, or vile. Those institutions being evil, wicked, or vile. According to the Heritage Foundation, government spending per household, which had held steady during the 90s at around $18,000, has, under President Bush, exceeded $20,000 adjusted for inflation. This is the highest level since World War II. Another indication of the Republican Party's uncontrollable appetite for federal spending is easily seen in the way it has dealt with funding for education, where once the party called for elimination of the Federal Department of Education, federal spending for the Department of Education has grown 40% under President Bush, financing our enemy, I might add, the public school. In fact, he continues, George W. Bush's proposed $2.57 trillion budget increases spending 38% from what the federal government was spending when Bush became president. His budget also increases spending 3.6% over last year's budget. Also noteworthy is the fact that President Bush is the first president since John Quincy Adams to serve a full term and not veto a single spending bill. Isn't that interesting? The entire full term of President Bush, he didn't even veto a single spending bill. Man, if he isn't one of the biggest spenders we've ever had, I'll tell you. In fact, Baldwin continues, not only has Bush not vetoed a single federal expenditure, the only bill he threatened to veto was a spending decrease. I'm referring to Bush's no change promise to his prescription drug entitlement that, according to George Will, has unfunded liability twice as large as the entire Social Security deficit. Democrats must be green with envy at the ability of the Republican Party to explode the growth of the federal government and still bask in the reputation as a conservative party. The truth is, however, there is no conservative party in Washington, D.C. today. Both parties are intoxicated with an insatiable thirst for restricted federal spending. Furthermore, this trend seems unlikely to change in the near future. A majority of voters appear content to allow their governments to spend tax dollars like drunken sailors as long as they enjoy real or imagined federal benefits. However, for the sake of intellectual honesty, it would be nice if today's professing conservatives would be willing to face, in fact, the fact that by supporting President Bush and the current crop of Republican leaders, they are merely giving aid and comfort to run-of-the-mill, big-time spending liberal or big-spending liberals. With apologies to Shakespeare, a skunk by any other name smells as raunchy. Well, all I can say at the Tyranny Response Network, and this is the Tyranny Response Unit, Dr. John Coben, is I couldn't say it any better than Chuck Baldwin. Just an excellent letter, and really helps us, I think, wake up and realize a little bit what George Bush is up to, folks. Never vetoed a single spending increase bill, and the only one he tried to veto was one that decreased spending. The man has brought us up to the largest government we've ever had since World War II. Amazing, and yet still thought of well by Christians who unfortunately have been a little bit gullible the last election in voting for him because they thought he would be their man, and ended up the man is really not a conservative at all, at least not fiscally, and he hasn't stopped abortion, so not sure what he's done to really impress people or help people on the right other than give them lip service. Anyway, this is Christian Worldview with Dr. John Coben. We've come up against our first break, and we'll be back in just a minute.
Warning. Dr. Coben's show is not recommended for anyone with an aversion to deep thinking and critical analysis.
Hi, this is Dr. John Coben. As many of you know that the Tyranny Response Network is listener-supported, and here's Gene Papke to tell you how you can support the Tyranny Response Network.
That's right, John. Folks, if you support TRN and you want to help financially, here's how. We at TRN are a 501c3 listener-supported broadcast. But we don't take a notions, potions, and lotions approach to fundraising. If you own, operate, or work for a company with bad paper, that is non-performing assets, we can turn that garbage into gold. Simply go to our website, NPPros, that's N as in non, P as in profit, P-R-O-S as in professionals, your non-profit professionals, that's NPPros.com. And remember, we raise funds, but without fundraisers.
Log on today to www.npros.com and find out how you can be a vital part in supporting the Tyranny Response Network.
If you have a question or comment for the show, please dial 864-201-6955. That's 864-201-6955, weekday mornings from 7:30 to 9. You may also email your questions and comments 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, to questions@policyofliberty.net. That's questions@policyofliberty.net.
You're listening to TRN, the Tyranny Response Network. It's roughage for your brain.
Some of you may be wondering, how did the Founding Fathers fight off tyranny? What was their means of doing so? Well, they didn't trust the state, certainly not government of their time, and they realized that if they were to create a government here in America, they would have to do so on principles that were completely unusual to anyone's understanding of government had been heretofore in the history of the world, from the Roman times especially, or even the Greek times onward. And one way they stopped tyranny dead in its tracks was to write provisions into the Constitution, namely the Bill of Rights, the first 10 amendments, that limited severely what Congress or the executive branch or the judicial branch could do to the people. Because the Founding Fathers rightly feared what government power without any restriction on it at all could do, and certainly, unless it was severely restricted, what it could possibly grow into. They didn't trust the state. They knew they would always be looking for loopholes and always ways. They would always be trying to find ways that they could get around the clear teaching of the Constitution, the clear requirements of the people. But at any rate, their first attempt at trying to stall the federal government from becoming so large and becoming oppressive and tyrannical was to present the Bill of Rights. Originally, there were 12 Bill of Rights proposed. Only 10 of them were ratified, and we've been reading the Bill of Rights, at least just one of them, every day for the last, I guess, 8 shows. And today we've come to the 9th Amendment. I would like to read that without comment. It simply says, "The enumeration of the Constitution of certain rights shall not be construed to deny or disparage others retained by the people." Just once again, "The enumeration of the Constitution of certain rights shall not be construed to deny or disparage others retained by the people." How important is it for you to know the Bill of Rights, folks? It's very important. You live in America, especially if you're a Christian and you're an American citizen. You have a special obligation because God gave you a place to live where you have a type of government that no one in the history of the world before America ever had. And our founding is very different than other people's foundings as far as a political organization. And here we have rights reserved to us in the 9th Amendment. We need to denote that the rights that human beings have in America were guaranteed before the government was created. In other words, government is not the grantor of our rights. We have rights to life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness or property antecedent to the state. We have them endowed to because of our Creator's work, not because of the government's work, as it is in many other countries. Governments cannot defy our rights or deny us our rights that God has granted to us. This is an important truth, and if Christians are ignorant of them, of this truth, we'll certainly be bound to lose what we have so carefully gone after. You know, I want to direct your attention to the webpage once again, because at policyofliberty.net there are a number of links right on the home page pertaining to this radio show. Now, I don't want it to take your attention away from the other parts of Policy of Liberty, which are a tremendous resource to you, including all of the articles and columns that I write weekly. You'll find all of those under the articles section if you want to read some of my current work, or even the work that's just about to be published. It usually ends up on the webpage before it does in the Times Examiner, for instance, or Free Market News, or wherever you might be reading it. In addition to that, I have other interesting items on the webpage, including hundreds of quotations for liberty, great quotations from great leaders or great thinkers about freedom and liberty. I encourage you to read those things. They're not only amusing, but they're thought-provoking and helpful, I think, in our own understanding of political society or public policy or the nature of the state and so forth. In addition to that, you have a entire biography of famous economists, including their photos, biographical links. Please visit policyofliberty.net for all of those things. But at the front page, when it specifically deals with the radio broadcast, I'd like to encourage you to scroll all the way down to the bottom of the page and click on the link that says Deep Questions for Dr. Coben's Radio Show. And there will pop up 18 questions that I've created and I have been reading over the last couple months. This is the 8th week of the Tyranny Response Network and the 8th week of Christian Worldview with Dr. John Coben. So we'd like to encourage you to take a look at these and think about them. They are questions, they're not easy questions to answer. They're questions that are philosophical, that have to do with a lot of important issues of the day. We'd like to encourage you to read those questions and maybe respond by email, or go ahead and give us a call at the show and we can discuss them on the show as we try to think more deeply and prepare you, especially the Christians, to understand and think better than we currently do. It's really a tragedy that Christians, who used to be the leaders of our American free society, are now the laughing stocks, the ones that are least educated oftentimes, and the least capable of holding their own, the most gullible in the public policy arena. We want to try to change that here with Christian Worldview and help people think better. If you're not a Christian, you're listening to the show, of course, you're also welcome to do so, and we're happy that you do so. We would always encourage you to look to Jesus Christ as your only means of salvation, because without Christ, you are eternally hopeless, and there is no hope for you other than there is no hope for you, period. But in this life, you have only a little bit of knowledge, perhaps, that you can gain, that you know something better than someone else about the free market or about politics or public policy. But answering these things will do nothing for you before the judgment seat of God. And therefore, while we do encourage you to listen to us, to learn about liberty and learn about what our founding fathers think or thought, and also to be encouraged by the only real radio show you can hear, at least in our area, that promotes the truth and freedom in a more libertarian or constitutionalist perspective. We appreciate you listening for that, but we also encourage you that, look, all these things are nothing compared to your eternal salvation that can only be attained through Jesus Christ. Well, at any rate, if you scroll, and scrolling down the page, if you click on that link, you will find that you have deep questions for Dr. Coben's radio show. There's also another link there. We're going to read one of those in just a minute. There's also another link on there that has to do with the take the quiz. It says four Christian views or perspectives on public policy. If you take this self-guided 15-question quiz, as many of our listeners have done, it'll help you understand where you fit on the range of modern evangelical thought, or at least historical evangelical thought, about what the nature of the state is, what the Christian's response to public policy should be or should not be. And I think it really will help you develop your own understanding and position regarding things like liberty, how far we should be willing to go with respect to liberty. Were the Founding Fathers wrong when they rebelled against King George, when they had a Boston Tea Party and destroyed private property and rebelled against taxes? Were they sinning when they did so, or were they right? Big question, and that's just one of the things we'll have to ask, not only in our deep questions here, but that quiz will help you understand where you stand regarding the scriptures and liberty issues. Well, when we come right back from the break, I'm going to jump right into one of these deep questions, but we're coming up against a break here on the Tyranny Response Network. You're listening to Christian Worldview with Dr. John Coben. Be right back.
Disinfecting the modern mainstream media, Christian Worldview with Dr. John Coben.
You're listening to the Tyranny Response Network. Go ahead, make your day.
This is Dr. John Coben. Visit policyofliberty.net. That's www.policyofliberty.net on the web. You'll find there books and articles written by Dr. John Coben, that's me, the Tyranny Response Unit, regarding things related to covenant marriage, allodial land titles, and free market economics. You'll also find there portraits of famous economists, including their biographical information and links to their famous works, as well as many, many quotations for liberty. Visit policyofliberty.net on the web today and find a wealth of information to help advancement of the truth.
If you have a question or comment for the show, please dial 864-201-6955. That's 864-201-6955, weekday mornings from 7:30 to 9. You may also email your questions and comments 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, to questions@policyofliberty.net. That's questions@policyofliberty.net.
Liberalism is not to be tossed lightly aside, but to be hurled with great force.
Oh, hurl that stuff and splash it against the wall. Not worth keeping around. Modern liberalism is just destructive to your soul, as well as to your pocketbook, as well as to your freedoms that you enjoy. And yet many people don't realize just how dangerous it is. Just an apology again for some of you who are trying to get through on the phone lines this morning. We've had some people try and not been able to get through. Please try again. Again, we've had an upgrade in our sound system and studio, and we're getting a little bit used to the ropes here. So if you've tried to call this morning and weren't able to get through, please go ahead and try again. We'll get you on the air. Also have a reminder from Lee Ott, who is the chairman of the Greenville County Libertarian Party. He'd like to me to read this announcement. We usually do that for the Libertarian Party, the Constitution Party, and others who are truly principled right-wing parties. He says, "Howdy, everyone. This is just a reminder about this month's Libertarian Meetup that is taking place this Wednesday, February 23rd, 2005, starting at 8 p.m. We, as usual, will be meeting at the Coffee Underground, which is located at the corner of East Coffee Street and Main Street in downtown Greenville, South Carolina. Please visit http://libertarian.meetup.com/36 to RSVP. Please join us." That website, again, is libertarian.meetup.com/36. We also have some interesting questions for the show. We've been talking about some of these deep questions for the show. But before we do, we have a caller on the line. We want to go ahead and get right to that caller. We'd like to welcome you to Christian Worldview with Dr. John Coben.
Hello.
Hello. You're on the air.
I can barely hear you.
Okay. I'm sorry about that.
I just want to let you know I'm enjoying your show this morning. And hey, that Chuck Baldwin kind of puts it in a way that... nobody else does, doesn't he?
He really does. Who am I speaking to?
This is Mark.
Oh, good to have you on the show today, Mark. Yeah, Chuck Baldwin, I'll tell you, he hit the nail right on the head when he talked about George Bush never vetoing a single spending bill in his entire first term and only trying to veto one bill, and that was a decrease in spending. Isn't that something?
Yeah, it's amazing when you look at George Bush, who was supposed to be the big conservative. He's been a terrible disappointment for any of us that truly hold a conservative and libertarian principle.
Yeah, he, as far as people who love liberty and love lower taxes and less government, he's certainly not been the man, has he?
That's exactly right. It's a shame that most of the evangelical community is following him headlong and don't want to hear anything to the contrary either. That's the sad part about it.
Well, it's just so obvious on its face for anybody who evaluates the past record of Bush or his current dealings that he's not been supporting the church or Christian principles, I mean, any more than giving lip service to them. And he's certainly been a big liberal as far as spending policy goes. Now, Mark, why do you suppose evangelicals follow him? Do you think they were really just being pragmatic, or do you think they were really deceived into believing this guy was actually a Christian and going to do God's work in the White House?
Boy, I don't know. That's a tough one. I really don't know how to answer that.
Yeah, it's one I think about frequently. Is my typical pew-sitting churchman who I, in the Baptist church where we attend or the Bible church where we attend, are they really just gullible and don't know, or do they just don't know the issues, or were they misled by the man? I don't know, but
my perception is, just gut feeling is that most of them are truly deceived. They really think, at least thought, at the beginning, that this guy was what he said he was, and now at this point, nobody wants to give up any territory. They think, he's a lot of them say he's not that good, but boy, he's a whole lot better than Kerry, and a whole lot rather have a Republican than a Democrat, and yada yada yada.
And yet we see that he's a whole lot worse than Bill Clinton was, and I can't imagine true conservatives thinking that. Kerry would have been, actually worse than Clinton. He might have been, but Clinton has to be the bottom of the barrel as far as presidents or so-called statesmen can be.
Yeah.
And yet Clinton didn't spend near as much as George Bush has been spending. Clinton was a small government guy compared to G.W. Bush.
Yeah, well, we're in a sad state, and hopefully things like your show will help people think a little more clearly.
Well, we
appreciate it. Keep it up.
Okay, thanks a lot, Mark. We appreciate the call, and we do hope the Tyranny Response Network is going to be helpful for people to understand more about the truth and to indeed garner a better perspective on realities when it comes to public policy, the nature of a state, and the current administration. So thanks again for the call, Mark. Well, we have a number of interesting questions on the deep questions for Dr. Coben's radio show. One of them is question number 6, and it says this. If you're on the, again, you can get this off of the link at the bottom of policyofliberty.net. Question number 6 says simply, the Apostle Peter tells Christians to honor the king, and the Apostle Paul tells Christians to be subject to the governing authorities. This would be in 1 Peter chapter 2, by the way, and Romans 13.
America has no king. Does that mean that Peter's admonition and is passé, like other cultural nuances in the New Testament, for example, holy kisses? What are the governing authorities in America? The president, judges, congressmen, and bureaucrats? The Constitution? Well, this is a pretty major issue for us. I mean, we have no king. So we have to look at the scriptures and say, well, you know, when it says honor the king or fear the king or be in submission to the authorities, and if there is no king or no Caesar anymore, does that mean that we no longer have to obey because by virtue of the fact of, that our government is a constitutional republic, those passages become something that we don't have to listen to anymore, or they don't mean anything to us. Just in the same way that you know, Paul enjoins people, or not enjoins, but tells people to kiss each other, men to greet each other with a holy kiss. Well, we don't do that anymore because it's a cultural issue that you know that they used to practice back then. We don't do that here in America or in anywhere in Western civilization, as far as I know. At least not maybe in Italy, a few places, but it's not very common. It's not that it's necessarily wrong. It's just that we don't do it anymore. So we don't think that we're sinning by not kissing each other, us guys, if we go and meet each other, right? Well, at least I've never heard any preacher actually advocate such a thing. But if that's the case, if certain commandments in the Scripture, which are clearly commanded by Paul to greet each other with a holy kiss, can go passé, can we also say that the admonition about the state and submission to it can also be go to the by the wayside? Well, some people can argue that, and I think they can make a case. I personally don't see how we can do that because I think there is an underlying principle in all of these kinds of passages, whether it be giving a holy kiss and showing brotherly love, which I think is the principle, and fraternal love and care and affection. And when you have admonitions about submission to the state, we also have to think, look, this is not talking about just the king. This is talking about an attitude that Christians should have of not being unnecessarily or overtly rebellious in nature. I mean, there may be a time when self-defense is called for, but our role in life is not to be just rebellious, nasty people. Now, there are other questions that will raise up from this because, we're coming up against a quick break here. But what we want to do is consider a little more deeply then if there is no king, but still we have the principle of submission to whatever governing authorities as our rule of life. How does that change under the American system with the Constitution? We'll consider that when we come back on the Tyranny Response Network. You're listening to Christian Worldview with Dr. John Coben.
You're listening to TRN.
Hi, this is Dr. John Coben with Integrity Group. Why is it so difficult for Christians to be good stewards of their finances? We know that God works miracles in people's lives, but He has not chosen to provide manna from above to help us meet our needs as He did with the ancient Israelites. As Christians, we should be leading the way as good stewards. Since we do not spend money on vices like non-Christians do, we should be able to save more. We want to work hard and save our money so that we can have something to give to missions and to the needy. In addition, we want to regularly set aside a portion for retirement. Christians should not have to rely on taxpayer-funded government programs for retirement. No Christian wants to become a burden to their family or church during the ever-lengthening period of old age. At Integrity Group, we are dedicated to providing personalized service, finding effective ways to protect and increase your hard-earned money. We are an independent financial planning firm. We specialize in finding creative custom solutions to meet your savings needs. Our offices are located at 514 Pettigrew Street in downtown Greenville. Make an appointment with Integrity Group today at 864-244-6464. That's 864-244-6464.
Warning, Dr. Coben's show is not recommended for anyone with an aversion to deep thinking and critical analysis.
If you have a question or comment for the show, please dial 864-201-6955. That's 864-201-6955, weekday mornings from 7:30 to 9. You may also email your questions and comments 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, to questions@policyofliberty.net. That's questions@policyofliberty.net.
Welcome to Christian Worldview with Dr. John Coben. Dr. Coben is an author, columnist, financial planner, and international lecturer. He holds a PhD degree in public policy, MA degrees in economics and business economics, and is a graduate of Reformed Bible College. Dr. Coben is an outspoken critic of public schools, government regulation, the IRS, paper money, welfare, and abortion. an evangelical Christian and the father of six homeschooled children, Dr. Coben is applauded by listeners across America and around the world as a champion of liberty, limited government, free markets, and peace. Now let's join Dr. Coben with Christian Worldview.
Welcome back in for the second half hour of Christian Worldview with Dr. John Coben. We've been reading this question off of the website, Deep Questions for the Radio Show, or Dr. Coben's radio show, and said the Apostle Peter tells Christians to honor the king, and the Apostle Paul tells Christians to be subject to the governing authorities. America has no king. Does that mean that Peter's admonition is passé, along with other cultural nuances in the New Testament, for example, holy kisses? And we said, no, it doesn't mean it's passé. It means there is a principle involved of not being rebellious, to authority, because having a rebellious attitude in the Scripture is condemned. Doesn't mean, however, that the that admonition fights against the admonition of self-defense. If we have the right under God's authority to defend our families, to defend ourselves from predators, then that predator class can easily be said to extend to the civil government. And this is a controversial thought, but at least the American founders, whether they be Baptists or Presbyterians or otherwise Congregationalists, all believed that when the government reached the state of being a predatory class of a predatory class, that we could attack it and we could assail it and replace it with something else. And that was the whole vision of the American founding, and many believers held to that. Some Christians today still would not hold to that. They think that's wrong. They're either pacifists or I've heard some people more in a more extreme view on the liberty of conscience perspective, which you'll also find more about if you take the quiz at the bottom of the policyofliberty.net page. These people have held to this particular view. Well, what are the governing authorities? Just to continue with question six of the deep questions, what are the governing authorities in America? Well, the president, judges, congressmen, and bureaucrats, or the Constitution? Well, this is a very interesting question, and it allows for a lot of subjectivity, because if the so-called king, if the being subject to rulers, or the surrogate king nowadays, is the Congress, the president, and the judicial branch, as well as the bureaucrats, then we would be subject to them as we would any other monarch. On the other hand, and I think this is probably a better interpretation or a better understanding, when we have an unusual situation like America, where we the people created the federal government and limited it by a constitution, the true government that we have is not the elected officials or the appointed officials, it's the Constitution itself. And when those who violate the Constitution, even the elected officials, get out of line, we have the right to abolish that government, as Jefferson put it, to abolish it and institute new government that is more convenient to the service of a free people. And that's why we have the Second Amendment. Remember, the Second Amendment, folks, is not just there to protect our right to go out and shoot doves or hunt deer. Its primary purpose was that the people would be armed so that they could rise up against a tyrannical state. If the American state ever became tyrannical, and some people might claim that looking at George Bush's spending habits, that we would have the right under the Constitution to obey God by obeying our Constitution and therefore attacking the state. Now, this is very controversial stuff, folks, because it could be downright revolutionary. And one might say, well, boy, I don't know, I don't want to be a revolutionary. Well, perhaps not, but would you want to be like Thomas Jefferson or Patrick Henry or some of the founders? I guess you would call them revolutionaries, and at times in history, it may well be that Christians are called to self-defense and to be revolutionaries in this sense. So, anyway, in my view, you may have a different view. The Constitution is our government in the United States. That is the founding document in which our government was laid, and it's the one that controls the elected officials. We do not have a monarch or a king or a dictator, although they sometimes behave that way, especially when you have homeland security and so forth. But we don't have, theoretically, any kind of dictators ruling over us in America, and therefore, what we need to do is recognize our constitutional responsibilities, fear the Constitution, give respect to it in a sense, and be pragmatic or practical in our dealings with the elected officials. We don't want to unduly, as a proverb says, take a foolish stand in front of a ruler and have him harm us because of our foolish stand.
But we always have to recognize that our ultimate allegiance is to God, and then secondly, in this country, it would be to the Constitution. Now, some people are going to violently disagree with me. No, Dr. Coben, this is wrong. You have to just submit to every one of those elected officials as if they're the king. But folks, that's not the way our system of government is set up. We are not a government that just simply wrote down on a piece of paper a few great ideas for how you might, you know, have senators elected or congressmen, or how you'd impeach a president, how you confirm different judicial appointments, blah, 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 and just some nice ideas. It's a radical statement, a radical document that allows for the government of a free people where the ultimate authority in any decision resides in the will of the people. No country in the history of the world before America had that provision. It was completely foreign to the understanding or comprehension or even the imagined system of in the mind of the apostles Paul and Peter and the other Christians in the early church. For them, it was always tyranny, it was always oppression, it was always an autocrat with the tyrannical rule and oppressive and repressive powers lording it over people. Didn't happen that way in America, and I think that makes us different. I think it makes us have to interpret and understand the passages in Romans 13 and 1 Peter 2, Titus chapter 3, verse 1, in a different light. Again, if you disagree, give us a call at the show at 864-201-6955. Be happy to discuss it with you. Be happy to hear a different perspective if you have one, if you can defend that position. So anyway, that's question six of the deep questions for Dr. Coben's radio show. If we have time, we might come back and do another one of those. And for the moment, we're here at a break again on the Tyranny Response Network. You're listening to Christian Worldview with Dr. John Coben, and we'll be back in just a minute.
Warning, Dr. Coben's show is not recommended for anyone with an aversion to deep thinking and critical analysis.
Hi, this is Dr. John Coben. Many of you know that the Tyranny Response Network is listener-supported, and here's Gene Papke to tell you how you can support the Tyranny Response Network.
That's right, John. Folks, if you support TRN and you want to help financially, here's how. We at TRN are a 501c3 listener-supported broadcast, but we don't take a notions, potions, and lotions approach to fundraising. If you own, operate, or work for a company with bad paper, that is non-performing assets, we can turn that garbage into gold. Simply go to our website, NPPros, that's N as in non, P as in profit, PROS as in professionals, your non-profit professionals, that's NPPros.com. And remember, we raise funds, but without fundraisers.
Log on today to www.npros.com and find out how you can be a vital part in supporting the Tyranny Response Network.
If you have a question or comment for the show, please dial 864-201-6955. That's 864-201-6955, weekday mornings from 7:30 to 9. You may also email your questions and comments 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, to questions@policyofliberty.net. That's questions@policyofliberty.net.
You're listening to TRN, the Tyranny Response Network. It's roughage for your brain.
And welcome back into Christian Worldview with Dr. John Coben. Hoping to give you something to chew on today that will settle your stomach, settle your brains, settle your drive to know something more about liberty and truth this morning here on Christian Worldview. Always be sure to turn into Christian Worldview. It's a great station to listen to. It's a great station to tell your friends about. If you want talk radio that really is deeper than the common drivel that you hear in most places, we would encourage you to continue to listen to Christian Worldview with Dr. John Coben, as well as the other pre-recorded shows on the Tyranny Response Network. Please remind people to check the webcast out. For those people who live outside of the Greenville area, yes, you can listen live to the show via the internet, or even those who are just away from the signal right around Greenville, if they live in Greer or Simpsonville or Spartanburg or Anderson, you can tune in on the web. Simply go to policyofliberty.net and click the link that says live. And at that link, after you click that link, your media player or whatever it is that plays media files on your computer will pop up and begin playing the show in a crystal clear manner. You'll have great clarity in the audio reception on the internet, And if you're at your home or office and are able to do so, we would encourage you to and tell your friends around America, around the world, to listen to the Tyranny Response Network off of the website. It's a great opportunity for them to interact and to get some good, solid talk radio dealing or promoting liberty and free markets and peace. At any rate, speaking of that, I had my some of my research staff send me, and we have a great volunteer research staff, by the way, several guys who are constantly scanning the airwaves and scanning the internet to find interesting news stories that they can send over and that are useful, I think, in promoting liberty or helping people understand what they're dealing with in the world today. And one of my guys sent me the text of President Bush's remark in Brussels, and had a few things annotated in here. Obviously, I'm not going to read his whole speech, but he was talking about this great transatlantic alliance. That always concerns me whenever I see the Bush administration talk about such things, because we look at Supreme Court justices, which have been appointed by Republicans, talking about putting America under UN rule and having our court subjected to Brussels or some other world court or international law. And then I see Bush trying to coddle the Europeans into accepting his sort of New World Order vision and working together into some sort of alliance. It makes me wonder exactly what he means and what he will do. I have some doubts about the man's integrity as a political leader, I'm afraid. He says, he wants to make all sorts of gestures to them, and a strong friendship is essential to peace and prosperity across the globe, blah, 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 the typical stuff you hear. He says, however, about the Middle East, lasting successful reform in a broader Middle East, I wonder if Europe would be included in the broader Middle East, well, maybe Africa or India, maybe that's where he's trying to go the other way, not so much Europe, he's trying to include into the Middle East some other countries over there towards the east. Lasting successful reform in a broader Middle East will not be imposed from the outside. It must be chosen from within. Governments must choose to fight corruption, abandon old habits of control, protect the rights of conscience and the rights of minorities. Where did he get all this stuff? Does that mean Kurds? I hope so. Anyway, governments must invest in the health and education of their people and take responsibility for solving problems instead of simply blaming others. Citizens must choose to hold their governments accountable. I wonder if we could do that here. Could we hold George W. Bush accountable for all of his crimes, allowing so many babies to be murdered every day, like 4,000, with an executive order he could stop this? He doesn't. How about the 300,000 Iraqis that were killed and the several thousand Americans and Europeans who were killed in his conflict to do what? I don't know. Or about his next conflict he's already planning in apparently Iran, or could be North Korea, in his vision of spreading democracy across the globe. What if we could hold George W. Bush accountable, if he would appreciate that? I somehow think that he wouldn't appreciate that. At any rate, his ideas here about governments investing in the health and education of their people, does this really sound like a conservatist? I don't know what conservatism has come to nowadays, folks, but this sounds like classic liberalism, classic Franklin Delano Roosevelt liberalism, or Lyndon Johnson liberalism, or even Bill Clinton-ish stuff, where we have governments taking a role and investing. In other words, confiscating tax dollars from people through an extortion scheme and then investing the loot or the booty in health and education of their people, which means they basically create social programs for the Department of Education and boosting medical or Medicare-type programs. This doesn't sound like conservatism, folks. This sounds, or even like somebody who likes free markets whatsoever. It sounds like George Bush is not much different than most other socialists I know, and probably, in my mind at least, in the Tyranny Response Unit's mind, is a soft socialist, in spite of his lip service to the contrary. He says further on there, Europe and America should not expect or demand that reforms come all at once. It didn't happen in our own histories. My country took many years to include minorities and women in the full promise of America, and that struggle hasn't ended. I wonder, and my production staff adds, do we need more bureaucrats to enforce this? I don't think so. I don't think so. Markets actually do a great job of taking care of problems with minorities or so-called prejudices or discriminations. I mean, I remember Walter Williams talking in class one time about the way blacks were treated in the South. When you have two people that are just as productive, one being black and the other one being white, and then just out of some silly prejudice or concern to not want to be associated with black people, a business owner who's white simply refuses to hire the black person or only wants to pay him a lower wage than the white person. What's going to happen in the free market is that a competitor will rise up and say, look, these people over here, this company owned by Joe Blow, is paying so much for labor that we could actually employ these folks who are black that are just as productive in the task and end up producing the same product for less and really blow out the competition on this. And that's precisely what does happen in a free market. Discrimination, as it's commonly called, quickly disappears in a free market system as new entrants come into the market and they dispel entirely these notions that other people have about not wanting to hire people because of the skin color. They take up the slack, hire those people, make a profit, and effectively put the other guy out of business or force him to start hiring the minorities. You don't need a government program to solve this, folks. You didn't need a government program to solve slavery. I mean, slavery itself was an abominable thing in many regards because of, and I'm talking about voluntary servitude. I'm talking about people who were kidnapped by their own black native friends and tribes in Africa and then sold to these English and Dutch traders and brought over to America. And then those who were born here generation after generation were maintained in slavery. This is a terrible and tragic thing. But this institution did not need a war to end. It didn't need government policy to end it. In fact, it ended in every country but ours in the world peacefully, as people saw that slavery became an unviable, not non-viable sort of thing. At any rate, going back to George Bush's remarks, and just to show that he's wrong about that, I guess, he said the elected president is working to disarm and demobilize militias. Well, why in the world would he want to disarm and demobilize militias? Well, if he's talking about people with the Second Amendment, the idea of a militia that we're guaranteed, like, let me get that Bill of Rights out a minute. It's always important to read that every now and then. Let's see what the Second Amendment of the Constitution of the United States says. A well-regulated militia, being necessary for the security of a free state, the right of the people to keep and bear arms shall not be infringed. So apparently the Founding Fathers were in favor of militias. Now, I think George Bush might be talking about rogue bands of predators instead of militias, but he's using the wrong word. Maybe he's just ignorant about his own Bill of Rights, but the Founding Fathers were not against militias. We want to have a volunteer militia in each state, each county, and those who can rise up and help us throw off tyrants, perhaps even like George W. Bush. Certainly he's apparently not thinking about the same thing in Iraq, or he's trying to deny them the fundamental rights that we have under the Second Amendment from the Texas state of the gun state, too. Very strange. Any rate, that was some interesting comments from my production staff about George W. Bush's speeches. A lot more globalism in here. I'm not going to read all the rest of it. I just have some severe doubts about George W. Bush's intentions and his New World Order plan. And you may as well. Hope to hear from you on the show by email or by phone call. We're going to come up and go and take our quick break here. We'll be back in just a minute on the Tyranny Response Network. You're listening to Christian Worldview with Dr. John Coben.
Disinfecting the modern mainstream media. Christian Worldview with Dr. John Coben.
You're listening to the Tyranny Response Network. Go ahead, make your day.
This is Dr. John Coben. Visit policyofliberty.net. That's www.policyofliberty.net on the web. You'll find there books and articles written by Dr. John Coben, that's me, the Tyranny Response Unit, regarding things related to covenant marriage, allodial land titles, and free market economics. You'll also find there portraits of famous economists, including their biographical information and links to their famous works, as well as many, many quotations for liberty. Visit policyofliberty.net on the web today and find a wealth of information to help advancement of the truth.
If you have a question or comment for the show, please dial 864-201-6955. That's 864-201-6955, weekday mornings from 7:30 to 9. You may also email your questions and comments 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, to questions@policyofliberty.net. That's questions@policyofliberty.net.
Liberalism is not to be tossed lightly aside, but to be hurled with great force.
Welcome back to the show. This is Dr. John Coben with Christian Worldview. We're so thankful that you've joined us this morning. We hope we're making your day and helping you understand more about liberty, about free markets, about peace, and the truth about public policy, and what the proper Christian view of the state, the nature of the state is, and the Christian's response to public policy is. We hope that we're able to perform those tasks for you every day here on the Tyranny Response Network. We're glad you've joined us. And please do support the show, at least by praying and giving us an email or a phone call now and then, that we could air and discuss live on the air. We have some other articles that are interesting coming up in the world of email today and the internet. News is just so free, and information is just so easy to get nowadays. I still remember, my kids don't appreciate what life's like without an internet. My kids are ages 8 through 16, and they just, well, Dad, haven't we always had the internet? No, there was actually a time where we read newspapers or, you know, literally did things the old-fashioned way, even wrote letters and mailed them with a stamp and stuff. It's hard for them to comprehend. Again, I suppose, you know, our parents would have said the same thing about various things that that they did without the technologies that we enjoyed from our youth. At any rate, we have some information from about the health department, the Center for Disease Control. February 21st, it says, bird flu could become epidemic. Washington, the earth may be on the brink of a worldwide epidemic from a bird flu virus that may mutate to become as deadly and as infectious as the virus that killed millions during three influenza pandemics of the 20th century, a federal health official said Monday. Dr. Julie Gerbding, head of the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, said scientists expect that a flu virus has swept through chickens and other poultry in Asia will genetically change into a flu that can be transmitted from person to person. The genes of the avian flu change rapidly, she said, and experts believe it is highly likely that the virus will evolve into a pathogen deadly for humans. She made the remarks in a plenary lecture at the national meeting of the American Association for the Advancement of Science. Skipping down through her article a little bit, she says, although those cases of human-to-human transmission have been rare, our assessment is that they are a very high threat. The avian flu is now spreading through Asia as part of what is called the H1 family of flu viruses. It is a pathogen that is notorious in human history. Skipping down a little bit further, she says, the CDC chief said her agency is getting ready for a possible pandemic next year. The government has ordered 2 million doses of vaccine. CDC is also plugged into an international communication and monitoring system that is hoped will give an early warning to the emergence of the deadly new flu. But at the same time, the agency is helping to produce the 180 million or so doses of a regular flu that are needed of a regular flu virus vaccine that are needed annually. Gerbening says the timetable for producing the regular vaccine yearly is very tight, with little room for problems. To produce a new vaccine in response to the sudden emergence of an H1 flu bug would require extraordinary new effort, she said. We don't now have the capacity to do both, said Gerbding. And also, before I make a comment about this story, I also wanted to read that we have another story about the Center for Disease Control. It says they're working to fill doctor's offices around the country with posters and checklists because half of all children with autism or similar developmental disorders aren't diagnosed until age 4 to 6. So the CDC wants to launch a campaign to make doctors and parents aware of the need for early diagnosis. He said about 24,000 of the 4 million children born each year eventually will be diagnosed with autism or other developmental disorders. The agency estimated that up to 500,000 Americans under age 21 have autism spectrum disorder, the CDC said. I wonder if anybody else says anything else. Anyway, sometimes you have to wonder about the diagnoses that are brought forth by this institution. Anyway, The agency says it's a pressing issue because more children than ever before fall into the category of autism and autism-related disorders, primarily because the medical officials and government widened the definition, because medical officials and the government widened the definition of autism in the early 1990s. CDC officials want to make sure parents and doctors know what to look for. If parents or doctors think there could be a developmental problem with the child, they should contact a developmental pediatrician, a specialist, or local early intervention agency, the CDC said. And it must be nice to be able to just widen the definition of something and throw a whole bunch of other people into the disabled class or especially privileged class. Well, these two articles are about the CDC raise some questions for us on Christian Worldview, and they're important questions because it has to do with the proper role of the state and what we would expect as Christians the government to do for us. I'm not talking necessarily about, remember, there is a difference between state and government. I'm not talking about what a state would do that is bad, because generally anything a state does is bad, whereas government is envisioned by the founding fathers. Is in a limited, restricted fashion, is quite different and quite good, quite helpful for a society, at least as envisioned by the founders. Remember this, I have an article that's on the online summarizing the position of Albert J. Nock as he distinguishes between the state and the government. Well, what is the role of the government in protecting people, protecting its citizens from predators? Well, we would say that its primary role is to protect them from predators, both in terms of a military or police effort in order to defend them when they're attacked, as well as a means to bring to justice those who are criminals. But also, microorganisms that would attack us would be included in defense. I don't think autism would be, but the flu virus, you could make a case for it. Look, you know, people can't individually defend against us that well. Let's use the government and its role to protect us from foreign invaders, to protect us from the bird flu, mutant H1 or whatever virus thing it's called. Interesting way to look at things, and it could well be the case. But beyond that, how far do we take government's role? Do we believe, from a Christian point of view, the state should have a role in determining what diseases there are and actively, proactively changing the behavior of people? I think they can go too far. We're going to talk about this in just a minute when we come back from the break. You're listening to Christian Worldview with Dr. John Coben on the Tyranny Response Network.
You're listening to TRN.
Hi, this is Dr. John Coben with Integrity Group. Why is it so difficult for Christians to be good stewards of their finances? We know that God works miracles in people's lives, but He has not chosen to provide manna from above to help us meet our needs as He did with the ancient Israelites. As Christians, we should be leading the way as good stewards. Since we do not spend money on vices like non-Christians do, we should be able to save more. We want to work hard and save our money so that we can have something to give to missions and to the needy. In addition, we want to regularly set aside a portion for retirement. Christians should not have to rely on taxpayer-funded government programs for retirement. No Christian wants to become a burden to their family or church during the ever-lengthening period of old age. At Integrity Group, we are dedicated to providing personalized service, finding effective ways to protect and increase your hard-earned money. We are an independent financial planning firm. We specialize in finding creative custom solutions to meet your savings needs. Our offices are located at 514 Pettigrew Street in downtown Greenville. Make an appointment with Integrity Group today at 864-244-6464. That's 864-244-6464.
Warning. Dr. Coben's show is not recommended for anyone with an aversion to deep thinking and critical analysis.
If you have a question or comment for the show, please dial 864-201-6955. That's 864-201-6955. Weekday mornings from 7:30 to 9. You may also email your questions and comments 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, to questions@policyofliberty.net. That's questions@policyofliberty.net.
Welcome to Christian Worldview with Dr. John Coben. Dr. Coben is an author, columnist, financial planner, and international lecturer. He holds a Ph.D. degree in public policy, M.A. degrees in economics and business economics, and is a graduate of Reformed Bible College. Dr. Coben is an outspoken critic of public schools, government regulation, the IRS, paper money, welfare, and abortion. An evangelical Christian and the father of 6 homeschool children,
Dr. Coben is applauded by listeners across America and around the world as a champion of liberty, limited government, free markets, and peace. Now let's join Dr. Coben with Christian Worldview.
And we welcome you back into the last 30 minutes of Christian Worldview, talking about this rather interesting issue of health care, specifically prevention of diseases or prevention of from the attack of a predatory species, if I can call it, of microorganisms. And whether autism also fits into the role of government in protecting us from predators. And I don't think so. I think that the founding fathers did not envision a state, or especially not a government, that would be fighting off every kind of disease, or that was identified or classified to be a disease by men. I do think that there is a role for infectious disease, that is, for things like this bird flu, to be protected, to be assailed by a government agency. And the reason for that is I don't see any difference between a marauding band of polar bears or microorganisms or parasites, or foreign invaders coming to the country and trying to attack us. Government has a role and responsibility, if it has any role at all, to protect us from such predators. But I think it carries it too far. And some of you may be surprised. I hope none of the listeners of Christian Worldview will be surprised by the fact that the Constitution, the Declaration of Independence, and the Bill of Rights nowhere guarantee you the right to medical care. They do not guarantee a right to a minimum wage. They do not guarantee a right to air conditioning in your home. They do not in any way provide for a means for you to be well-educated. These are not rights that you have inalienably from God, endowed by your Creator, as Jefferson proclaimed. Instead, what you have are very simply rights to life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness or property. Where do we get these ideas about people having a right to health care, or a right to 12 years of education, or even a college education, or whatever else it might be, a livable wage, things like that come up constantly in public policy? Well, some of it stems from something called the Declaration of Rights, 1945 United Nations Declaration of Rights, where they list a number of these so-called positive rights that people have, that governments should be providing these for people. The problem with positive rights, unlike the opposite negative rights like life, liberty, I don't know, they're called negative rights in political theory, life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness, is that positive rights require someone else to pay for you to have that right. In other words, to have 12 years of education or a livable wage or health care, someone else has to foot the bill for you. For your right to your own liberty be preserved, doesn't require anybody to pay anything. It just means that they won't enslave you. For you to have your right to life simply means that they won't kill you. They have to actually take an action against you to violate those rights. And the other kinds of rights, these positive rights, you have to extort money from one class and give it to another under the auspices of the state, and supposedly for the philosophical virtue of providing these positive rights under the Communist Manifesto, the Declaration of Rights of 1945, the United Nations Declaration of Rights, or any other humanist manifesto, or anything else that might come down that have these things laid out in them. Well, we can't, as Christians, support such things. It's not right for us to believe that we have rights that require other people to provide. God did not place us in the world with the idea that plundering our neighbor was the normal course of action. We can't simply say, well, I live in America, and therefore I have a positive right to medical care and Medicaid or Social Security, whatever it is, and therefore I have a right to go and plunder my neighbor, take his money, take his labor, convert it into some benefit, something that benefits me, and I'll use the state as my henchman to go out and do the dirty work on collecting the cash or the loot. This is not a Christian principle. It's not even an American principle. It's a principle thought up by socialists who have come into this country and taken over much of the thinking in academia and in public policy circles. You heard it right here first on the Tyranny Response Network, perhaps, but that's only because the mass media is infiltrated with people with different desires and drives and philosophies. How sad is it that Christians have become so gullible in this, than believing that they can just soak it up and live on the government dole so to speak, and go ahead and take all these benefits as if they have some sort of a right. When Christians should be leading the way, and as Paul says, let him who stole steal no more in Ephesians 4, I believe it's verse 28, we should not be those who promote theft. And any time we have an extortive system of taxation, redistribution of one class to another, we have theft. And we have somebody stealing from somebody else. So when it comes down to these CDC cases or the issues, sure, there is a role for the CDC or the government in protecting us from predators, even if there are microorganisms coming to attack us. I think we can make a good case for that. But we have no case for governments making classifications about autism or deciding to change people's behavior regarding the autistic or any other kind of disease-ridden, identified disease that they come up with. It's not their role, and although it's important to deal with people with autism or have any other disease, it can be done much better in the free market and under a system of free enterprise rather than a bureaucratic state with a vain philosophy or a faulty philosophy of positive rights. Well, we all want to move on to another story, and again, we're happy to discuss these things with you on the air. We're looking for an opportunity to do so here at Christian Worldview with Dr. John Coben. If you'd like to call the show, 864-201-6955, be happy to hear from you. We're coming up against a quick break, and we'll be right back in just a minute on the Tyranny Response Network.
Warning, Dr. Coben's show is not recommended for anyone with an aversion to deep thinking and critical analysis.
Hi, this is Dr. John Coben. Many of you know that the Tyranny Response Network is listener-supported, and here's Gene Papke to tell you how you can support the Tyranny Response Network.
That's right, John. Folks, if you support TRN and you want to help financially, here's how. We at TRN are a 501c3 listener-supported broadcast, but we don't take a notions, potions, and lotions approach to fundraising. If you own, operate, or work for a company with bad paper, that is non-performing assets, we can turn that garbage into gold. Simply go to our website, NPPros, that's N as in non, P as in profit, P-R-O-S as in professionals, your non-profit professionals, that's NPPros.com. And remember, we raise funds, but without fundraisers.
Log on today to www.npros.com and find out how you can be a vital part in supporting the Tyranny Response Network.
If you have a question or comment for the show, please dial 864-201-6955. That's 864-201-6955, weekday mornings from 7:30 to 9. You may also email your questions and comments 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, to questions@policyofliberty.net. That's questions@policyofliberty.net.
You're listening to TRN, the Tyranny Response Network. It's roughage for your brain.
We have another story come in on the wire recently here. Parties hope to win on Social Security. Washington Republican Senator John Sununu of New Hampshire, an enthusiastic supporter of Social Security personal accounts, was hit with charges in his most recent campaign that he favors privatization. He won anyway. Everyone has finally recognized the program is no longer the third rail of politics, Sununu says. It's a sweeping claim from a winner of a statewide campaign in 2002 that previewed some of the debate now unfolding nationally. Well, interesting that this whole thing is coming up again, including our, and it will continue to do so until it's either defeated or actually Bush ends up getting some sort of so-called privatization. Senator Lindsey Graham, a Republican from South Carolina, said, I've been campaigned twice against on, boy, I can't even read what he said. I've been campaigned twice against on this, and I'm still standing. See, he said in a recent interview, I believe the public is much more mature about this. Public polling, the article says a little later on, says as much, indicating that many believe Americans not yet in middle age think that Social Security will not be able to deliver the promised benefits. A little bit further down, the president's been making it seem to people that privatization makes you money, it loses you money, said Senator Chuck Schumer of New York, who heads the party's Senate campaign organization. And he continues to go down. We win if the issue is defined as personal if the issue is defined as personal accounts, we lose it's defined as privatization. Pollster David Winston wrote recently in a presentation for Senate Republicans. Sununu countered that Social Security trust funds will be depleted in 35 years, echoing Bush's current argument. I'm willing to talk substantively and thoughtfully about important issues like Social Security, he told his campaign audiences. Well, interestingly enough, this is in the news again. Social Security has no trust fund. I mean, this is widely known that the so-called trust fund is actually filled with government IOUs that are non-marketable, not even like a treasury bill. All the money that is paid into the Social Security system goes into the federal budget and is spent on whatever Congress wants to spend it on. That's just the base facts. The problem is, demographically, is that the Ponzi scheme is going to come undone simply by virtue of the fact that when the baby boomers hit retirement age, as they're starting to come to that point now, there will not be enough people working to support them, partly because of abortion, as one caller recently reminded us. You slaughter off, you know, 1.5 million babies every year. You just reduce the labor pool by, you know, 40 or 50 million people that could be supporting those baby boomers. But so be it. We live in the modern age, and we like slaughtering unborn children. At any rate, the fact of the matter is there's not enough people to support the current level of Social Security benefits that would come out to the baby boomers. And because of that, we have this obvious issue of the need for some alternative. In places like Chile, where I used to live, Social Security is already privatized. It's heavily regulated. The funds cannot invest in anything they want to. And there has to be a certain amount of Chilean, for instance, local capital that has to be invested in. And there's a number of things that are not very free market down there as well. But it's a whole lot better having a mutual fund with something, even if it's just government bonds, rather than and no mutual fund and nothing in your hands. The whole socialist security system is nothing more than a socialist program that's been inherited and adopted through the policies of the New Deal and Franklin Delano Roosevelt. It has nothing to do with free markets. It has nothing to do with ever providing people with secure retirement. In the past, it's only survived because so many people, more people, were working than those who were on the take, on the dole. And let's not ever forget, folks, Social Security economically is no different than any other welfare program. It's a transfer from those who work to those who don't work by the coercive and extortive taxation policies of the federal government, by coercing people, strong-arming people into paying something. It's not paying into your own account. It's not saving up for your own retirement. It is forcibly taking some money from people in one area, from workers, and giving it to others. That's the way the system works. It's the way all welfare works, whether it's food stamps or Pell Grants or anything else that the government does. You are actually using extortion when you take a Social Security check, because you're authorizing, in a sense, by applying for those benefits, for government to go and rape and pillage and plunder somebody else in order to give you the benefits that you want for your retirement. Oh, that can't be, Dr. Coben. I paid in my contributions for years. Folks, you have not paid anything in any real sense. You've been stolen from, any more than you pay into the South Carolina fund when you pay sales tax, or you pay in when you file a 1040 form for income taxes. You're not paying into anything. You're just being stolen from. The government's taking your tax money. That's what they're doing. And I don't care if you call it a contribution, a loot, booty, taxes, whatever the word you want to use to describe it. It's just money forcibly extracted from one person and given to the next. And in your case, you didn't pay in any common sense of the word. You were stolen from. They took your money, and it's gone. It didn't go into an account waiting for you or for your use. It went to someone else's coffers immediately, almost immediately, especially in a deficit-running government. So at any rate, let's get off of the idea that you'd have some right to this because you deserve it, it's your money, and so forth. But Dr. Coben, they promised that it wasn't going to work that way, that this was supposed to be some retirement system for us. That's the way Franklin said it himself. I remember him. Franklin Roosevelt told us, you know, years ago. Who cares? What does it matter what people at one time said or promised? What matters is what is actually set up now. I feel badly for you, that you were deceived. That you actually believed the lie, that they pulled the wool over your eyes, that they made you think that you were getting a retirement plan, and instead you've just got a socialist scheme, a Ponzi scheme, or if, like Walter Williams says, a method of intergenerational holdup. That's all the thing is. It's not a system of retirement. It's simply welfare. And if you're taking welfare, I think as a Christian, you've got a problem because you're not entitled to steal from other people. And the Bible says that you should not be a burden to anyone, but should labor with your hands. If a man doesn't work, he should not eat. There is your own retirement funds that you can use. That's fine. But don't steal from other people. And let's not use extortion as a means for us to retire. What a sad day in the Christian church that we're so worried about whether or not people drink a glass of wine, at least here in Greenville, or whether or not they go to a movie or some things like that. And yet, when it comes down to Social Security and the pastors, you never hear them once saying, oh, that's wrong to take that. Oh, that you shouldn't be stealing from other people, brother. It's not what Christ would say to harm your neighbor like that by stealing from people. You never hear it. Why? Because preachers either are ignorant or they don't have the backbone to do it. Even the ones who are educated and understand what's really going on with Social Security would never say it to the gray hairs because they don't want to lose their support or cause too much controversy. And it's sad that preachers are so spineless today that stand up for what God's Word actually teaches. Social Security, what a great farce. It's a sad day in America when we have to think about such things as the Socialist Security system. Well, we're coming up towards the last break here before the end of the show. We're very glad you've joined us today. I hope the show has been an entertaining feature or an aspect of your morning. It's helped you think a little bit more about liberty, about free markets, about peace. And you're welcome to call the show. The numbers will be coming up shortly during the break. If you want to get into the last segment of the show, please do so. Also ready, standing by, prepared to receive your emails at questions@policyofliberty.net in case you want to send us an email during the break, and be happy to read it during the last segment. You're listening to Christian Worldview with Dr. John Coben, and we're on the Tyranny Response Network.
Disinfecting the modern mainstream media, Christian Worldview with Dr. John Coben.
You're listening to the Tyranny Response Network. Go ahead, make your day.
This is Dr. John Coben. Visit policyofliberty.net. That's www.policyofliberty.net on the web. You'll find there books and articles written by Dr. John Coben, that's me, the Tyranny Response Unit, regarding things related to covenant marriage, allodial land titles, and free market economics. You'll also find there portraits of famous economists, including their biographical information and links to their famous works, as well as many, many quotations for liberty. Visit policyofliberty.net on the web today and find a wealth of information to help advancement of the truth.
If you have a question or comment for the show, please dial 864-201-6955. That's 864-201-6955, weekday mornings from 7:30 to 9. You may also email your questions and comments 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, to questions@policyofliberty.net. That's questions@policyofliberty.net.
Liberalism is not to be tossed lightly aside, but to be hurled with great force.
And we're doing that today on the Tyranny Response Network and Christian Worldview. We're hoping that no Christian who listens to this show over time will maintain a stance of liberalism. We're being a liberal, except in the very classical sense of the term, of Thomas Jefferson being a liberal, for instance. I suppose that I would not, without any problem, be willing to call myself a classical liberal. In fact, when I'm overseas, and I will be, have been just recently invited to go back to South America and lecture to theologians on free market economics at the end of April, I will be called a liberal down there, un liberal. Why am I un liberal, a liberal? Because in other nations of the world, to be a liberal is to be what we consider in this country a true conservative or a libertarian. To say you're a conservative or un conservador is really to be a socialist, one who's conserving the aristocracy. The only reason I can understand why America and perhaps parts in England have the term somewhat reversed is that in America we have liberty at the foundation, and to be a conservative here was to conserve liberty. To be a conservative in other nations was to conserve the aristocracy, the feudal system, or some kind of socialist premise. And certainly that wouldn't be anything to be very proud of as far as I'm concerned. Well, Professor John Tomosky, who I know and have met recently, is still a Republican for some reason. That's the sad part. Why people still hang out in the Republican Party, I don't know. It's just, especially after they see old GW and what he's up to. It's not the same as it was when Reagan was around, folks. It's not the same as it was when Barry Goldwater was around. Things have changed. Well, Professor Tomosky has taken a very hard right stand. He's basically a Burkean conservative, and although he probably belongs in the Constitution Party or along with me in the pro-life libertarian movement, he's still hanging out with Republicans. Has some good, interesting things to say, however. He says, the essence of and challenge to political conservatism, or the essence of political conservatism, he writes the following. By political conservatism, I referred to principled, deliberate conservatives, not knee-jerk followers of presumed political fashion. Obviously, there must be something conservatives seek to conserve. Moreover, this must be something classic of lasting value, not anything contemporary and possibly transient. I believe a clear distinction would be drawn between win-at-any-cost big tent Republicans and bona fide, good faith in English, conservatives. Conservatives are true to the spirit of 1776 and our founding principles, civil liberties, personal freedoms, and individual rights, as resuscitated by Goldwater Reagan. Also, a competitive free market economy is advocated by the other epical revolution of 1776, publication in England by Scotsman Adam Smith, an inquiry into the wealth of nations. In order to preserve civil liberties, personal freedoms, and individual rights, it follows as a matter of necessity that governance should be at the most proximate level of government feasible for the matter at hand, and that government should grow no larger than is necessary to carry out its legitimate functions. Could you imagine a conservative, so-called conservative today, one of these neocon guys actually swallowing and thinking, yeah, this is the stuff I believe, right? I mean, George W. Bush, the big spender. Well, I'm sure Tomosky doesn't equate George W. Bush with a true conservative. Continuing to read on, for as government grows larger or becomes more remote, the balance of power between a local community and the central authority shifts, increasingly to the disadvantage of the community, eventually transforming citizens of a free and sovereign state into subjects of an imperial power. Big tenters will say or do whatever might put them in office. As their interest is not universally beneficial public policy, but the tangible reward that can come with having one hand on the lever of power. In attempt to be all-inclusive, big tenters make it clear they have no political gyroscope to keep them on a well-defined and consistent policy moral course, when at all costs politics is devoid of principle or stable public policy positions. Its politics is a policy vacuum and misleading in moral and a misleadership in a moral morass. Its constituents to be damned, being big money politics, pandering to vested interests rather than policy-oriented governance, directing to the needs and wants of the general public. The big tent, big enough to hold many, but fits only a few. Its politics were only policy issues whose pocket is being lined and whose ox is being gored, and the only principles are to reward one's friends and damage one's adversaries. And the distinction between friend and adversary, which can change literally on a dime, depends on whether the party gives one money and power or takes them away. Grassroots politics, being in vogue, has of course been embraced by big tenters, but in name only. Almost every Republican also claims to be a conservative, no matter whether they are deficit spending advocates of big government and an overwhelming imbalance of power between the federal and state governments. Although they employ grassroots techniques of organization and campaigning at the micro level through neighborhood captains and home socials, door-to-door visits, phone banking, and street corner pamphleteering or sign waving, big tenders are not generally populist. Once elected, they immediately court the swells, shun the rabble once they once lauded, and then close the bottom to top channel of communication. Reagan was a populist who cared about the rabble from whom he emerged. McKinley was a champion of post-Civil War industrialists and financiers. Reagan was a conservative dedicated to founding principles of the American Revolution. McKinley was a reactionary and opponent of the trust busters. McKinley, as Alexander Hamilton was a latter-day neo-Tory, rather ironically, met a similar fate. Hamilton did not wish a revolution against the imperial system, but a mere palace revolution that would put him as the first federal and his Federalist cronies at the head of a powerful central government led by active executive branch. In 1793, he forced Jefferson out as America's first Secretary of State over Jefferson's insistence on government by the consent of the government. Likewise, McKinley was opposed to populist domestic agenda. Judge then for yourselves whether the big tenters and globalists are the neoconservatives they claim to be, or they are they more the political heirs of William McKinley than of Ronald Reagan. Since the sons of Jefferson lost the war over federal supremacy to the neo-Tories 140 years ago, American patriots have been fighting a rearguard action against collectivist oppression. The conservative wing of the Republican Party is very much engaged in the fight to resist rolling back the Reagan reactions in the size and scope of the federal government, and to preserve his Cold War victory against the ongoing rehabilitation of the Soviet Union under his KGB leader. Well, I appreciate John Tomosky, Dr. Tomosky, who's a Ph.D. in economics from University of Rochester, and a very good thinker. Glad to have him on the team. We like the Burkean conservatives, few of them around. Most conservatives are conservatives of the neocon variety today, really liberals and soft socialists and big government people who are not very principled men. Unfortunately, that's what conservatism has become. It's really hard, really, to call yourself a conservative anymore and have it mean anything. In fact, it might mean just the opposite if you're not careful. So I would encourage Christians to shun the label conservative until it becomes better defined, or call yourself a paleoconservative or a Burkean conservative, like Dr. Edmund Burke, or a Calhounian conservative, if you wish, to try to differentiate you from the so-called conservatism of the McKinleys, Clays, Lincolns, and Hamiltons of the world. Well, we come to the end of our show today. We're glad that you've joined in this morning with us at Christian Worldview with Dr. John Coben on the Tyranny Response Network. We look forward to tomorrow as we continue the eighth week of the program, encouraging you also to take a look at policyofliberty.net, see what you can do to get involved in this great volunteer effort to either in terms of donations, prayer support, or in donating your time and equipment. Also encourage other people to listen to the webcast. We have a growing number of people listening every day on the web. Please tell them to go to policyofliberty.net, read the links there, click live so they can listen via the Internet anywhere in the United States or around the world. Until tomorrow, God bless you. This is Dr. John Coben with Christian Worldview signing off.
You've been listening to Christian Worldview with Dr. John Coben on TRN. Join us again tomorrow morning right here at 97.7 FM on the Tyranny Response Network for Christian Worldview with Dr. John Coben.
Hi, this is Dr. John Coben with Integrity Group. Why is it so difficult for Christians to be good stewards of their finances? We know that God works miracles in people's lives, but He has not chosen to provide manna from above to help us meet our needs as He did with the ancient Israelites. As Christians, we should be leading the way as good stewards. Since we do not spend money on vices like non-Christians do, we should be able to save more. We want to work hard and save our money so that we can have something to give to missions and to the needy. In addition, we want to regularly set aside a portion for retirement. Christians should not have to rely on taxpayer-funded government programs for retirement. No Christian wants to become a burden to their family or church during the ever-lengthening period of old age. At Integrity Group, we are dedicated to providing personalized service, finding effective ways to protect and increase your hard-earned money. We are an independent financial planning firm. We specialize in finding creative custom solutions to meet your savings needs. Our offices are located at 514 Pettigrew Street in downtown Greenville. Make an appointment with Integrity Group today at 864-244-6464. That's 864-244-6464.